Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for downloading the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com.
Corruption, 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 great enemy.
Today we take a look at the ugly choice faced by voters in a special election in Alabama December 12th, when arch-conservative Bible thumper Roy Moore is expected to defeat Doug Jones, a Democratic candidate who is deeply compromised and, as we understand it, is getting support from the Karl Rove Alabama machine. It's quite a political scrum, and we turn to Roger Shuler, the intrepid journalist who's exposed a lot of corruption in Alabama over the years, including the infamous case of former Governor Don Siegelman.
Corruption.
And I want to thank the people who subscribe to my podcast and make all this possible. Listeners like Alice Carlson, Linda Gray, Steve Wozenski, and Judy Holloway. They're just a few of the people who support me, and I invite you to join in. Come to peterbcollins.com. Find the menu button, click on it, pull it down, and click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page where you've got easy choices to make. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support. Well, the South's going to do it again. They're going to send a monster or a compromised senator to Washington, D.C.
Can I be proud to live because South's going to do it again?
Yeah, loud and proud, the South's going to do it again. Rocking into the podcast today with the Charlie Daniels Band and Roger Shuler, the intrepid journalist who blogs at legalschnauzer.blogspot.com. Returns to the podcast today to help us understand the original political swamp that has never been drained. It just gets murkier and murkier. Roger, thanks for joining me today.
Well, you're welcome, Peter. Always glad to be with you. And yes, the swamp just keeps getting refilled.
Now, you and I are speaking on Halloween, and Luther Strange, who is not going to continue in the U.S. Senate, he was the interim appointee after Jeff Sessions was promoted to Attorney General, but he could actually trick-or-treat without a costume, wouldn't you say?
Oh, he's a big fella, yeah. I remember my wife Carol and I were at a department store not far from where we used to live in Birmingham, and remember seeing Luther. He kind of blocks out the sun when he's in the aisle.
He kind of reminds me of Lurch from the Addams Family.
Right, right. And, of course, we were talking off air, Peter, about basketball. He played at Tulane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I can't remember exactly what years he was there, but he was a college basketball player, and I guess he's, I'm not sure his official height. I think he's 6'9 or 6'10, something like that.
Yeah.
And,
now, in our previous conversations, we talked about Luther Strange and the dirty deal with the disgraced governor who had to step down. And he appointed Luther Strange before he resigned, and he would have been facing impeachment. But Strange kind of put that in his vest pocket to protect Governor Bentley. And that sordid deal perhaps was part of the reason why voters rejected him in favor of Roy Moore, who, whatever you think of the guy, clearly has a skewed vision of the Constitution and who does not really honor the separation of church and state. If anything, pardon me, he gives supremacy to his religious beliefs over the law and the Constitution. So he won that 3 or 4 way primary, and he's facing a Democrat named Doug Jones in the December 12th special election. Now, today I want to find out more about Doug Jones, who, according to some fundraising emails that I get from Democratic groups, is in a statistical tie. They show polling at 42-42 between Roy Moore and Doug Jones. Now, I've heard people talk about polls that show Moore ahead by 10 points. Do you have a credible sense of what the polling is today for these two guys, Jones and Moore?
Well, I just find it hard to believe, Peter, that the one of them being tied is accurate. I think it's kind of a lone wolf. I don't know if that's a single poll, but I don't know of any other poll that comes close to agreeing with that.
Yeah.
I just feel certain that Moore is well ahead in the polls and will eventually probably win by double digits, would mm-hmm. be my guess, unless something really bizarre happens, and I'm not even sure if something bizarre, his followers, it really has nothing to do with government or governance, I guess I should say. They just, it's kind of a little, almost a cult-like following, mm-hmm. and even though he's been bounced from office twice,
right.
he not only doesn't respect the Constitution, he doesn't respect the rule of law, and yet he wants to, and then there's nothing to suggest in his background that he's remotely qualified to be a judge, but now to be a U.S. senator is really stretching it. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing is there's the guy on the other side, not much better, except for very different reasons.
But, yeah, well, I want to dig into Doug Jones here in a minute, but let's just recap that Roy Moore insisted on installing a monument to the Ten Commandments at the courthouse there in Alabama. And after lengthy process, he was bounced from the court for that act of defiance. And then after the Supreme Court marriage equality ruling, he told the local judges and I believe the people who issue marriage licenses in Alabama to defy the Supreme Court order. And, you know, that to me is just astounding. You know, when that woman clerk in Kentucky had her 15 minutes of fame and got to meet the Pope, you know, I said, okay, you know, that's just one outlier who decided to, you know, take what she thought was a principled moral stand. But, you know, Roy Moore is pandering to the lowest ranks of Alabama voters with a Christianist message that is, you know, just clearly not only out of step, but just fundamentally in direct conflict with the oath that he would take to uphold and defend the Constitution.
Well, that's true. And I would argue it's not even a Christian. It's just Ten Commandments. That he has found, I guess by accident, that really plays with people. But he's just an Old Testament guy. He doesn't even begin to show any understanding of the New Testament. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that it's whatever Christianity he is based on. It's a bastardized version of it. And it's just sad that people fall for con games, and that's kind of the era we're living in right now. They, we've had Bush v. Gore, an election that appeared to be stolen, and Kerry in 2004 appeared mm-hmm. to be stolen,
indeed.
And Siegelman and Riley in Alabama in 2002 appeared to be stolen, and now there's all sorts of Mueller Monday yesterday was interesting, and so. You know, we really need to get back to reality and an appreciation for rule of law and punishing those who just blatantly violate it. But
mm-hmm.
A lot of this stuff either originates in Alabama, interestingly, or it has ties to Alabama, as Mueller Monday yesterday did. And I'm not sure what about. I consider it my home state, even though we don't live there right now. But there's just been so much, just going back to the Siegelman case, and I think a lot of it is race-based. I think white conservative people, you know, they think they can get away with anything.
Mm-hmm.
If they tout a certain Christianity, a form of Christianity, or sort of wink, wink about, you know, we'll help you fight off the dark people, and people buy that. So it's disturbing, to say the least, because Alabama should be above that. I mean, it's 2017, and it should be above that.
And Roger, a month ago, I got my first post-release interview with former Governor Siegelman, and we recounted how he was released from federal custody on the day that Jeff Sessions was confirmed to be the Attorney General. And the irony in those twin events is not lost on me.
Well, yeah, in Sessions, I've come to believe, and I didn't fully understand this, but I think so much of the corrupt court system, political system in Alabama that I've been writing about on my blog for 10 years, I think so much of it derives from Jeff Sessions, and probably some of it from Richard Shelby.
Mm-hmm.
But Sessions particularly is tied into this Business Council of Alabama, Karl Rove, Chamber of Commerce, wing of the Republican Party, and Sessions is just an evil little, well, I won't use the word.
Roger, you can use any word you want.
I think that's going to be proven if this Mueller investigation goes where I hope it will go.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of corruption that Sessions has fostered in Alabama two or three decades, the whole nation now is getting a taste of it, but I think it's going to become known just how utterly morally bankrupt this guy is. Mm-hmm. and the people around him.
Well, and in my conversation with Don Siegelman, I learned, as I always do, a little bit more about some of the earlier elements, but I didn't know about the way the two of them had tangled during the 1990s. And so he did describe, Sessions as a top nemesis. And so that's quite consistent, you know, with what you're saying today. I want to mention that and give a little shout out to one of my listeners and subscribers, Dick Atlee, who is a guy who lives in Maine, very sharp fella. And he got one of those emails saying, hey, you know, this is almost a tie. Doug Jones and Roy Moore. Kick in a little cash here, and we're going to be able to elect a Democrat from Alabama. And I immediately winced and said, well, look, even if that poll is accurate, that's within the margin of theft. And, of course,
yeah.
I assume that in Alabama and historically that it would be stolen on behalf of the Republican candidate. But what you have, I believe, exclusively reported, because I haven't seen this anywhere else, Roger, is that Karl Rove is once again intervening in Alabama politics. He's had a base there for many years. He was a pivotal player in railroading Don Siegelman into federal prison behind the bogus charges. And he's now active in support of the Democrat. Now, this is all behind the scenes, and your reporting explains, based on a key source, Dana Jill Simpson, that Rove and the Republican machinery are going to bat quietly for Doug Jones. They're describing themselves as neutral regarding Roy Moore. And I guess, you know, if you're a Republican in Alabama and Karl Rove is neutral on you, that's a declaration of war.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And yes, and Jill Simpson, who your readers probably know, played a big, big role in the Siegelman case, essentially really brought it to public attention that there had been she was on a conference call where people were planning the Siegelman prosecution. And she has been my number one source on about Doug Jones. And I've been reporting on Doug Jones and his ties to the what we call the Riley machine in Alabama, the former governor Bob Riley and his son Rob Riley, who I call Uday. he should have been born in Iraq, but I mean, just truly, truly dreadful, awful, awful people. And Doug Jones is in bed with them, primarily through a number of things, but one of the HealthSouth case from several years ago. Richard Scrushy was the co-defendant in the Siegelman criminal matter,
right?
And he was the former CEO of HealthSouth, and you've interviewed him. And but Jones and Rob Riley joined with a cast of other lawyers in a civil case, federal civil case, and they made a whole bunch of money off that. And so, and Jill Simpson has said that really gave Jones the financial clout to even begin to think about running for U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. And he's a kind of a Trojan horse, being put up as a Democrat, and Joe Biden has come to Alabama to support him, and he's a former U.S. attorney under the Clintons, under Bill Clinton. He's not at all what a progressive Democrat would think of. Mm-hmm. Now,
before we get into the current situation with this Senate race, give us a thumbnail. Where the hell did Doug Jones come from, and what kind of a Democrat do you describe him as, Roger?
Well, he, like I say, his best known public position was a U.S. attorney during near the end of the Bill Clinton era. He wasn't the original U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, but he was the second one. The first one stepped down, and he took over. And I think he served roughly from 97 to 2000, somewhere in that range. And then after he had stepped down, he sought an appointment to help prosecute the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing case, which, of course, is one of the famous tragedies in Alabama history, dating back to the Civil Rights era. And a former, or I guess still it was a Klansman, was convicted in that. And that's really what Doug Jones kind of hangs his hat on, is that he was part of the team that got a conviction in that. But there's really not much else to hang his hat on. He talks a fairly good game in terms of progressive politics, but Jill Simpson has said, and as I've quoted her, is that that he's going to answer and be beholden to right-wing interest, and because they're the ones really supporting him. And so it's, voters, of course, have to make their own decisions about that. But what he says and what he actually will do, and who he's tied to, is my big concern. And I say my concern, it's just my interest journalistically to let people know who he's tied to. And he's really, there's substantial evidence that he really stabbed Siegelman in the back. He was Don Siegelman's the other thing he's noted for. He was Siegelman's defense attorney.
Oh, really?
At one time.
Uh-huh.
And of course didn't do much of anything to help. If anything, he helped make matters worse for mm-hmm. For Siegelman. But
and what is it in the trial that led to his conviction, with the false testimony from the young man who was heavily coached? I'm blocking on his name right now.
Nick Bailey.
Bailey,
yes.
Yeah.
What happened, Peter, a veteran criminal defense attorney named David Cromwell Johnson was Siegelman's original lawyer in that matter. And I think also the one, you're probably thinking of the one in the Northern District in Birmingham that was originally brought
right.
against Siegelman
dismissed,
by Alice Martin, who was the U.S. attorney in that district. And I think Cromwell Johnson represented Siegelman throughout that, and then was more charges. Once that was dropped, that case, the judge kicked that out, actually the judge more or less kicked it out, and then the prosecution dropped it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought more charges, different charges, in the Middle District under Laura Canary, and Cromwell Johnson was involved in that, and then he died, kind of curiously, although he was about 60, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug Jones wound up as Siegelman's attorney and charged the former governor $300,000 for criminal defense, and he didn't do much of anything, according to the record.
Well, your coverage has shown how the legal practitioners bungled the Siegelman case. The charges were vague. The Bailey testimony was, very problematic. There was juror misconduct. There's a whole litany of issues that a sharp defense attorney would have taken advantage of. I don't know, I haven't read the transcript, so I'm not prepared to level, a serious indictment on Doug Jones. I can only say from my observation that Siegelman was failed by a series of legal counsels.
Well, he was, and he Jones actually bailed out before trial. He was not the lawyer at trial. It's a guy from Mobile, and his name escapes me at the moment, but was the main Siegelman lawyer at trial. But Jones took $300,000, bailed out because of a so-called conflict, and didn't do squat and made $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then all he did was extend the statute of limitations for the government to bring the case, and they still didn't bring the case on time. It was still almost a year past when the 5-year statute of limitations had actually expired, and so it was just horribly managed, and Jones was right in the middle of that. And Siegelman makes no secret. He said if David Cromwell Johnson had died, there's no way I would have ever been convicted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry.
If he hadn't
have had died. Not died.
Right. Yeah.
And but aside from that, Jill Simpson has stated that that Doug Jones, while he was representing Siegelman, was working with Rob Riley on this civil case, which just blows your mind. I mean, how can you not see that as a conflict of interest?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Rob Riley was Siegelman's mortal enemy, his father and Rob Riley,
sure,
who are kind of like one and the same. So you really have to wonder about the guy's integrity, his legal ethics as a lawyer, and no number of trips by Joe Biden can change that in my mind.
Yeah. And so, Roger, react to this, because what occurs to me is that in this multi-layered scrum, that everybody, as Trump would say, everybody comes out as a loser. All right. Trump made that famous trip to Alabama just before the runoff election, and he gave this tepid endorsement of Luther Strange and openly speculated before all these fans about how maybe he was making a mistake. So
yeah,
it was such a backhanded way of supporting Strange. And, of course, he used that podium for his attack on the sons of bitches who take a knee at an NFL game, leading to this whole divisive effort to force some sort of fake patriotic conformity by every NFL player and every American. At any rate, Trump came out of that a loser, and apparently he was badly bruised by that. His ego didn't recover for several million tweets.
Well, I think he underestimated the how badly Luther Strange looked in the eyes of Alabama voters because of the Bentley appointment, which you mentioned earlier, and I take a little pride in all that because I started the story that brought Bentley down about his extramarital affair with a aide and so on. So, you know, legal schnauzer's been, we've been in the scrum.
Yes, you have.
That's a good term for it. I'd like to think we've been in the scrum in a positive way, but it is a scrum.
So Strange and Trump are losers. You know, Steve Bannon came out of that with this new image of a kingmaker, you know, behind a very dubious royal unit.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Bannon is threatening to take out every Republican incumbent senator except for Ted Cruz. So this, you know, we're seeing things that are really pivoting and changing. And then when you bring in this race where, you know, I believe that the fix is generally in for Roy Moore. But if Doug Jones does get this boost from Karl Rove and the Chamber of Commerce and the Native American gaming tribes that are routinely pillaged by Republican political operatives, and that was a key element of the Siegelman case as well. You know, everybody loses here. Even if Doug Jones manages to pull off a huge upset, he's deeply compromised, and he's a tool of Karl Rove if he does make it to the Senate.
Well, yeah, and it really is... one of those things where you look to the right and you want to hold your nose, and you look to the left and you want to hold your nose still. And Jill Simpson has, this is just her personal choice, that she is going to stay home and on Election Day, December 12th, and she recommends that others do the same. And
Wait a minute. I think it always makes more sense, because if you don't vote, the lower turnout, you know, tends to benefit the entrenched candidates, and I would see that as Roy Moore in this case. I would suggest that people who are right-minded go to the polls and write in Roger Shuler or legal. Let's vote for the Schnauzer. But I really think, you know, when you cast a protest vote, it does at least show up, and a newspaper reporter might write a feature article later saying, look at these bozos who wrote in other names in this important race. But if you don't vote at all, you just, sit on the couch, that really empowers the most negative forces.
Well, yeah, and Jill may or may not be right about that, but I'm kind of surprised some sort of effort hasn't started to write in Don Siegelman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if he would even be allowed to qualify with the felony conviction on his record and so forth. But
right.
That would be an interesting turn of events if somebody actually started and whether Siegelman would be able or willing, interested or not. It would be kind of sweet justice in a way if he denied Doug Jones, because Jones has really put several long knives in the middle of his back and in the middle of Siegelman's back, and so it's ugly. And you know, we still got I guess it'll be a month and 12 days almost till the election, and it's certainly one that you know, your listeners all over the country will be hearing about and probably will be interested in, because it's there's going to be a lot of national focus, and already has been, you know, on this race.
And Roger, you know, I see many of your articles when you post them on Facebook, and when Facebook allows me to see them, and we're going to talk about that next. But I noted with interest that last week when you posted the October 24th story about Rove's possible behind-the-scenes support for Doug Jones, you got some flack from people who just said, look, he can't be worse than Roy Moore, and they basically blame you for honestly reporting what you know about Doug Jones. And I want to tell you that I have great empathy because last year, as you probably know, I didn't support Hillary Clinton. And I did a lot of critical commentary about her campaign, the way it was managed. I actually predicted in August of last year that Trump was going to win. And many of my lefty and progressive and hardline Democratic supporters really were annoyed by that. And some are still holding a grudge. I still hear from them. But, you know, our job is not to promote a certain candidate. You know, the roles that we have are different. You're a journalist and I'm more of an opinion guy. But we're similar in the respect that, you know, we're not here to cheerlead for a political party or for a specific candidate. Our job is to call him as we see him, to offer context and provable facts so that people can make up their own minds. But you've been pilloried because you have told what you believe to be accurate about Doug Jones. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, it is a little odd and disconcerting when, you know, I'm pretty far to the left, I think, and certainly support Democrats over Republicans in general. And yet, yes, I've been attacked pretty hard from some people on the left. And of course, I've tried. A lot of people say, well, who are we supposed to vote for? Do you have to vote for Roy Moore? And of course, my response is, I'm not reporting this to affect, you know, change your vote, or it's, you know, this is information and people can hopefully digest it and act however they think is appropriate. Like you say, I'm not in the business of telling people how to vote, and the alternative to Doug Jones is really bad. So, but I do, and I've been reporting on Doug Jones and his alliance with Rob Riley for, and it probably cost me my job, frankly, at UAB, where I worked for 20 years. I reported on their alliance in March of 2008, and just roughly 2 months later, I'm out of a job. And Rob Riley's daddy, as they say in the South, was governor at the time. And he and Jones stood to make an awful lot of money off of this HealthSouth case. And I actually didn't even break the story in question. A guy named Sam Stein, who worked for Huffington Post at the time, and Sam is with another organization now, but he broke it and wrote it. I just kind of picked up on it in about the fact that somehow Rob Riley, who had this information about the Siegelman Scrushy criminal case, wound up on this civil matter, even though he had no experience. This was about securities issues, you know, financial issues, and he had no background in that kind of law. You know, presto, winds up in this civil matter, and so. But I've been reporting on the Doug Jones Riley alliance for a long time, almost 10 years, and so it's not a new thing. And however people vote is fine with me. You take enough heat from the right. It's unfortunate to take heat from the left, too.
Well, and Roger,
you know what that's like to yourself, Peter.
Well, and you and I rely on, you know, subscriptions and contributions from your readers and my listeners to support the work that we do. And I took a measurable hit last year where people ended subscriptions or, you know, didn't take out new ones, and were pretty, you know, direct and blunt about that. You don't support Hillary, therefore I'm not subscribing because I don't want to hear what you have to say. And I think likewise, I can imagine that people have slacked off on support for you because they falsely believe that somehow you're in the corner of Roy Moore because you're writing critically of his opponent, Doug Jones. And this is one of the sad features of our siloed media today, where people want to hear things that confirm their existing beliefs. And you and I are really dedicated to, you know, kind of shaking things up and explaining the things that that don't match the surface representations that most people never go beneath.
Yeah, and in fact, I've even been accused of, are you taking money from Roy Moore, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's a strange deal, but I do know this. Anybody that supports and has been supportive and just believes in that Don Siegelman was wronged, how they could consider voting for Doug Jones is beyond my comprehension. Nobody can rationally explain that. And I think, but there's a lot of people in Alabama who claim to love Don Siegelman are going to go out and vote for Doug Jones.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I know a woman in Huntsville who's very prominent in supporting Siegelman, and she's out there, on the pavement for Jones, and mm-hmm. and that's her right to do that, of course, and I respect that, but I don't. It's just kind of, keeping one eye or shut to the reality, and I know firsthand. I don't think Siegelman would mind me saying this. I know how he feels about Doug Jones, and mm-hmm. and it's not positive.
Yeah.
And so, I guess some people just see it as strictly a party thing, and no matter who the Democrat nominee is, we got to support him. You wind up with some strange bedfellows, I guess, yeah. is what happens.
Well, Roger, I want to use this moment to ask people to support your work. And as I mentioned, I think this comes at a time when many people are either backing off or, have decided that you're now questionable because of the reporting that you've done. And Don Siegelman, in my recent interview with him, made a pretty moving call for people to support you and Carol. And I want to echo that today by asking my listeners to visit legalschnauzer.blogspot.com. And there's a PayPal button that says donate right there on the upper right side. And I hope that you can be as generous as possible, because Roger does pay a price. And, his last 10 years, he has been paying an incredible price for reporting honestly about the corruption in Alabama. So please be as generous as you can. And I know this is a particularly tight time for Roger and Carol. So if you can help them out this week, I'd be much appreciative. So, Roger, I made a reference earlier to the fact that Facebook doesn't always deliver your posts. And I had a recent experience where I got a notification from Facebook saying that a post that I had shared from Legal Schnauzer was being taken down. And it's because it didn't meet community standards. So I click on this thing and go to the next page, and it says, we've heard there's nudity on this page. That's what the Facebook robot told me. And I was outraged by this, and I, of course, sent them a message saying this is preposterous, there is no nudity, there is no violation of community standards. Now, their action occurred 5 days after I had actually shared your article. And there were people who'd already commented on it. Several, just made brief comments or put a like on it. And then suddenly on a Sunday morning, I get this notice from Facebook that this has been taken down. Now, it's since been reinstated after I objected to their removal. But you've seen a pattern of this, and you believe this is related to your reporting on the customers of the Ashley Madison Cheaters website.
Yes. I mean, this has probably happened about a dozen times now, Peter. And with Facebook, and that's just kind of a general number. I haven't kept track of it, but it's happened a lot. And the message that we get every time is that it's my post is considered spam or looks like it's spam. And then I send a thing saying it's not spam. And then a few hours go by and they say, okay, it's not spam, and we'll put it back up. And then we've had to, we've gone through this, I don't know how, 10, 12, maybe 15 or more times. And I think, we've actually been attacked by Ashley Madison people for before this started happening. I had a bunch of documents on the Scrib document sharing site that were taken down and basically stolen. And I think Ashley Madison, I don't know if it's people or bots or who, but I think have been driving that. And interestingly, that happened right about the time I was, can't remember exactly the subject, there was some evidence that Roger Stone or some people connected to Roger Stone who may be involved in the Trump scandal,
mm-hmm.
Was involved in attacking our site. And,
really?
And some of it also has been in terms of time, not only the Ashley Madison reports, but reports about Doug Jones and also reports about your listeners may know this, but my wife, Carol, is still facing criminal charges here in Missouri. Cops broke her arm in dozens of places, apparently, and according to the x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
And they've charged her with assaulting a cop.
Yeah.
And so it's the Ashley, I think the Ashley Madison Jones and reporting about Carol's case, what's been done to her, and which is an enormous strain on us. We just had a very unpleasant visit with a public defender yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And so I think those three things seem to be driving that Facebook problem.
Mm-hmm. And all you've done, and I know it offends some people, but you took the information that was hacked from Ashley Madison about subscribers, paying customers in Alabama, and you simply posted it. And this, of course, makes some married men squirm and leaves them with some susplaining to do to their wife and maybe a mistress. But also it exposed that they were horn dogs who were swindled because Ashley Madison had like 36 million horny guys and very few women. Apparently the females are bots. Who
right.
will make a come on to a guy, and when he responds, there is no follow-up. So it is a scam of major proportions, and you have simply listed the Johns, and some of them are actually named John, who fell for this online hoax. And, you know, I guess you also have reported that Ashley Madison, which I think is based in Canada, was using hardball tactics so that they, you know, they'd get your credit card when you first subscribe and you think, oh, wow, you know, I'm going to get to shack up with a hot babe. And instead, you know, you pay more charges to communicate with these bots. And then if you refuse to pay or you challenge the billing, they threaten to send a copy of the bill to your home mailing address, which, of course, if you're a cheater, is a serious problem. And I guess there's one guy who didn't have that problem because he was a single male when he was subscribing to Ashley Madison, and he's the one who kind of pressed the case and discovered that this was fairly routine.
Right. Yeah, I was just amazed to learn that, just how low down that company is and has been. And my reporting has focused on almost all people in Alabama, a few in Missouri, but who are very high-level professionals, people of they're not necessarily public officials, but people in area, you know, CEOs, lawyers, doctors, people in public trust, and it shows that you know, their judgment is not very good, and that's kind of the whole point of it. And but there are, I don't know exactly who they are, whether they're bots or humans or whatever, but the Ashley Madison people don't much appreciate my reporting. And to my knowledge, I'm about the only journalist who's, you know, this is a story with so many elements to it. It's a technology story. It's a sociology story. It's a financial story. It's a legal story. And I've looked at it from a family story. You know, how these people that, that are married, many of them have children, many of them have very responsible, high-ranking careers and make lots and lots of money. I've reported on people that have million-dollar homes, and so that's kind of been the point of my reporting, and I'm sure a lot of them self-identify as conservative and pro-business and all that, and so there's an element of hypocrisy there too,
just a little.
Yeah, and in fact, I just had a guy call. I think it was yesterday. I'm getting ready to do more Ashley Madison things. And he claimed, but I'm a good Christian guy. I said, well, if you want me to quote you saying that, that's fine. But I mean, I said, you're on Ashley Madison, right? And he said, oh, well, yeah. Why are you doing this? I'm a Christian guy.
And devil made me do it.
I guess so. And he's a chamber of commerce. He used to be head of the Chamber of Commerce in West Alabama. And, so that'll be something for readers to look forward to. He and a number of other people are coming soon.
Praise the Lord and log on to Ashley Madison. Well, sure. Roger, there is one more thing I want to talk to you about, but I wanted to take a little musical break first.
Okay.
Tied to what we're just talking about, Ashley Madison. It's one of my favorite songs by Lee Schott Williams.
Meeting in secret places.
It's called The First Rule of Cheating. Is don't get caught.
Meet him behind closed doors. Wondering who knows. Wagon tongue always reveal what the heart is trying to conceal. Silent lips said it can't be bought.
Remember. The first rule of cheating is don't get caught.
That's a classic.
It really is. So the last thing I wanted to touch on here, Roger, is your coverage of the Todd Henderson case. And he's referred to as Charles Todd Henderson. I don't know that if that's a Billy Bob thing in the South or if that's just the way you describe people who are accused by their full names. But at any rate, yeah. He was elected as the Jefferson County District Attorney. He happens to be a Democrat, and he took up with a divorcee who he is now married to. And as I read your coverage of the case, he's been framed for the report of a detective that he spent the night with the woman who is now his wife before they were married. Now, this seems like a really bogus case, kind of like the one that you were subjected to over alleged libel of public figures. And mm-hmm. I'd like you to just give us a quick sketch of this case and the extent to which this is just another part of corruption in the legal system in Alabama.
Well, the key starting point, Peter, is that the DA that Todd Henderson beat was a guy named Brandon Falls, who was appointed to office by Bob Riley when he was governor, Republican, and then won election and had served for about 8 years. And I think it was generally considered that he would win, being the incumbent. And Henderson, this relatively unknown white Democrat, won. And between the election, which he won, and the date that he was supposed to take office, all of a sudden he's charged with perjury related to this divorce matter where he had served as what's called a guardian ad litem, mm-hmm. which is basically a position to oversee the interest of the child. There was a 10-year-old daughter involved in the marriage that was breaking up,
mm-hmm.
And he was asked a question: Have you ever spent the night with the mother wife in that case? Mm-hmm. And he said no. And they alleged that he lied, that a private investigator had proof that he had spent the night. Well, if you look at the private investigator's report, there's enormous gaps, hours and hours. It doesn't prove anything. It doesn't prove he spent the night. I mean, mm-hmm. there were all sorts of times that he could have left and come back or what have you. And so he did not, or at least it was not proven, that he lied under oath. And then the second factor is that, was the statement even material to the divorce case? And that's kind of a subjective question, but material meaning, did it have an impact on the divorce case? And in my view, it clearly didn't. I mean, the husband had already filed for divorce long before he, Mr. Henderson, even knew the wife, and they'd been separated for a year or so before that. And to jump to the conclusion, is it just real clear to me that this was a political prosecution every bit as bad as the Siegelman mm-hmm. case, that this guy was, Todd Henderson was prosecuted simply because he had the audacity to beat a Republican.
Now based on your reporting, Roger, it seems that the judge in the divorce case, a woman named Patricia Stevens, supplied the critical testimony at the perjury trial. Do you find her credible?
No. In fact, well, it's not really so much a matter of credible. Based on her reports in the press about her testimony, she didn't even touch on the perjury. She just claimed that he should not have been named guardian ad litem, it was because he knew the mother, he shouldn't have been guardian ad litem, even though she approved him. And that's all. She didn't even talk about perjury. And yet a jury either was stupid enough or was compromised enough to what she did do on the stand was break down and cry, supposedly because her court had been sullied by Mr. Henderson's alleged lie, which was never proven to be a lie to begin with.
She cried on the stand.
He wasn't even asked about adultery in the hearing in question. So very, very curious.
And explain this drama scene. She actually cried while she's testifying, and she's a judge herself.
Yes. Yeah. She broke down crying, and based on what was reported in the press, the AL.com, which is a right-wing news site, the main news site in Birmingham, said that that was the big killer testimony, and all she did was get up there and boohoo, and Hawaii over nothing. I mean,
And did anything adverse affect the 10-year-old child that the court was so concerned about in appointing Henderson to the guardian position?
Well, this ironically, this judge should probably be subject to perjury. She said in the transcript of the hearing when this was raised about did he spend the night, and she said I don't, if the child wasn't present, I don't care whether he spent the night or not. He said, you know, that's what she said, and then she changed her tune when she got on the stand at trial and made it sound like something awful had happened when she had said it's just not, you know, doesn't matter to me, and it's not material to mm-hmm. the case. Mm-hmm. Basically he was convicted of being the wrong guardian ad litem, mm-hmm. and except that's not a crime. There's no such statute, but that's basically what he was convicted for, just like Don Siegelman was convicted for being a Democrat that refuses to roll over and die at election time for Republicans. That's what he was convicted of.
And so what is the status of Henderson? Has he assumed office, or is this a way to derail that?
Well, no, he's never assumed office. When the perjury charge was brought, he was suspended from taking office, and now, unless his conviction is overturned on appeal, he'll be permanently denied. And this is in Jefferson County. One of the issues, Republicans are having trouble winning there now. It's not a majority black county, but there's a significant number of black voters, and they support Democrats, surprise, surprise. And they supported Todd Henderson, who's white and a Democrat. And that makes Republican, you know, the corporate types and the legal types who get away when there's a Republican DA, they get away with all sorts of stuff. Well, they're worried about having a Democrat in the district attorney's office. And so, you know, it's just really, really gross political prosecutions. And and Henderson, as I understand it, is planning an appeal, and we'll see where that goes. Alabama appellate courts are just horrible. And
well, I hear that you know, Doug Jones is going to be available for legal representation, you know, maybe in the middle of December.
Well, that might be, but I'm not aware of anybody that Doug Jones has ever gotten off on criminal charges. They always plead guilty.
Yeah.
Or they get convicted. I'm not aware of anybody he's ever, and yet people go to him because of the 16th Street Baptist Church, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, between now and December 12th, it will be very interesting to see what turns this election might take. And well, either way, Alabama is going to come out, and the nation is going to come out a loser, because it's not going to be. Roy Moore has shown that he has no ability to function in any kind of public office, and Doug Jones is tied to the Riley machine, who are tied to Rove, who's tied to Abramoff, who you've had a famous interview with several, and. So, I mean, that's the kind of low, low, low scum that Doug Jones is attached to. You know, the Abramoff rogue, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Republicans. And so it's a really wretched choice for those who are trying to figure out what to do. And,
well, Roger, I want to thank you for updating us on the swamp called Alabama. And it's always fascinating, and it's amazing just you know, how deep and murky it continues to be. And you help us shed a little light on this, and I'm very grateful. Roger Schuler from LegalSchnauzer.blogspot.com. Thanks, Roger.
Thank you, Peter. Sure enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this in-depth interview with Roger Schuler. As always, I hope you can be generous and support him at a difficult time. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.